Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you in week two of our unofficial start to the Bucks season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line, we have Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He has been globetrotting with the Bucks on their busy preseason schedule. He's been in Washington D.C. and Dallas, following these Bucks as they get ramped up toward that October 24th tip-off to the 2019-2020 season. Matt, the big story right now that the Bucks are dealing with is the injury bug. Eric Bledsoe, news is just about a week old now. Eric Bledsoe leaving a game with what was thought to be an oblique injury. Turns out it's a cracked rib, which actually might be a better situation. Give us the whole skinny on what you've heard about the Bledsoe injury, how long you personally expect him to be out, and how that impacts what the Bucks are going to do early in the season.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that in terms of injuries, this is probably the better result or a better result than what we thought it might have been. Initially, the thought was that it was an oblique injury, which that can be, you know, if it's a strain or even a partial tear or a tear, that could be, you know, into the weeks or months in terms of rehab. You know, the big thing last playoffs was Marcus Smart. The Celtics had a partial tear of an oblique, and he missed a month, and that was kind of rushing it. You know, but then there were reports that he had a cracked rib, and, you know, that seemed pretty severe. But then I went to shoot around in Dallas and talked to Bucks GM John Horst, and he made it clear that, you know, Bledsoe does not have a cracked rib, but he does have cracked rib cartilage, which doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt. Because it definitely hurts. I feel like, you know, if anybody's had any rib injuries before, when you breathe or laugh or, you know, try to turn your abdomen in any way, like you're going to feel some pain. But it's something that there's no actual bone fracture. It's just the cartilage between his 9th and 10th rib. And so he'll be able to play again as soon as his pain is minimal. Doesn't need to go away. It just needs to be at a point where he's comfortable playing with it and is able to do the things he normally does. You know, there were some reports saying that it would be 2-3 weeks before he would get back, which would mean that he would likely miss the beginning of the regular season. That could still be the case, but, you know, his recovery is a little bit more fluid than that 2-3 week structure. You know, he could be back as soon as Thursday for the final preseason game, though I don't foresee any reason why they would bring him back for that, considering that they have a full week before they play regular season games, and they're going to try and get him as much time to feel as little pain as possible. But the sooner he can start, you know, feeling good, getting back onto the court, the sooner he can play again. So, you know, it could be something that keeps him out at the start of the season. But there's also an opportunity or possibility that he could be back sooner because the injury maybe isn't as severe as they initially feared.
And if they do decide to hold him out for the start of the year, I'm assuming it's a pretty simple situation. George Hill moves into the starting rotation, or starting lineup. He is the point guard, you know, going forward. What about behind that? Do things change? You know, do they need to get Frank Mason up to the full-time roster and have him be the backup? Like, what would the dominoes be in that case?
Well, I would expect that they would then keep Frank Mason, you know, up toward maybe in the active roster, depending on, you know, who else is injured and what they think they need for that, you know, opening night game against the Rockets. The good thing for the Bucks is that two-way players, their days don't start counting until the G League starts training camp, which is October 28th. So they can keep Frank Mason, they can keep Cam Reynolds with the Bucks up through the 28th without using any of the 45 days allotted to them over the course of the season. And so maybe Frank Mason is then active for the first game. They've also used Dante DiVincenzo a lot as a ball handler, as a point guard during the preseason. I think overall he's played well. He hasn't necessarily made shots. I think he was 6 of 17 the other night against Washington. A game where he actually got a lot of good looks and drove and created opportunities for himself. He just struggled to finish, and that's something that we also saw a little bit when the Bucks played the Bulls at the start of preseason. But overall, I think the results have been positive, even if the stats, I guess maybe the process has been positive. The results haven't necessarily been there. Dante's, you know, efficiency numbers, or the team's efficiency numbers when he's been on the court, offensively and defensively haven't been great. I guess, you know, actually now that I think about it, the last time I looked at the numbers, the defense is actually pretty good. The offense was what was slowing down. And you would probably expect that with somebody who's running the point more than he normally does. He's also playing with second, third, sometimes even the fourth unit, playing with guys where you would expect a dip in the offensive production. So maybe those would be guys who would kind of play that backup point guard role. Obviously, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, those guys can run the offense, can take the ball up the court. They can run actions through them. They can kind of get things started. So you'd probably see more of that. You know, we saw that a lot on Sunday when Giannis was out and Chris was running the point. He started the game like with the offense kind of flowing through him, and he was the primary initiator. And you know, so we'll see more of that. I think the team's hope is that they can have Eric Bledsoe back, you know, for that season opener and be able to you know, use their normal rotations. And even if he plays a little bit less, they still have depth to back him up, but it isn't going to be a major hindrance. But we won't be able to find out more about Bledsoe's condition probably until Wednesday at the earliest, since the Bucks got back from their trip on Monday. They didn't practice Monday. They're having a light individual day on Tuesday, which means no media availability. So the soonest we'll be able to kind of get in the gym and be able to talk to Mike Budenholzer and some of the players would probably be Wednesday.
Yeah, and Eric Bledsoe, as we saw last year, was a big part of the defensive shape against James Harden, which would come into play in that season opener in Houston against the Rockets. So, like you said, I'm sure they'd love to have him back. I'm sure he'd love to be back for that matchup and that opportunity. So on the floor, we've had four preseason games. Bucks have won them all, some more aesthetically pleasing than others, but I don't know if anybody's paying attention to the aesthetics or even the outcomes of preseason basketball. I'm going to talk specifically about a couple guys that I want to get your thoughts on, but just overall, have you learned anything about this team, or have there been any observations that you think are pretty notable after seeing them play for four preseason games?
Well, I think as a team, they look about the way that I would expect. It's not, you know, kind of like Mike Budenholzer to drastically change things, and the roster didn't turn over in, you know, a major way. It's a lot of the same guys. And so I'm not too surprised by what they've been doing and the way that they've been kind of going about things. You would expect the defense to get better over time. And especially when they're playing their starters more, maybe you'll see, you know, better defensive play. In terms of individual guys, I think some of the vets have kind of gotten off to a slow start. I think you look at like George Hill, Wes Matthews, in particular. It seems like, you know, you have an idea of what they can be, but they're not there yet. And maybe that's just because it's the preseason. And you know, especially in Wes Matthews' case, he's still feeling things out. He's new. You know, so those guys haven't played overwhelmingly well. And so you would expect to see them at some point maybe turn the corner. You know, and I think that Dragan Bender has played really well. Obviously, it's been against a lot of second and third units. But as that basically third center the Bucks are carrying, you know, he's really made the most of it. I wrote about him on Monday for Tuesday's paper, and you know, he has shot the ball really well. He has, you know, gotten praise from Mike Budenholzer for his passing. He's just adjusted pretty quickly to the Bucks scheme and what they're asking him to do. And I'm not sure exactly how that translates to the regular season in terms of playing time, just because, you know, he has been playing, you know, basically that third center role, a position that, you know, they're not going to use all that often. You know, they also have Giannis and Ersan and Brook and Robin Lopez both ahead of him. Those guys are going to get minutes DJ Wilson is obviously hurt right now with a left hamstring strain. But when he comes back, he's going to battle for time there in the front court. So, you know, I don't know how often Dragan's going to get opportunities, considering that, you know, Budenholzer mentioned he still needs to work on his body and needs to get stronger. He needs to be able to, you know, hold up not just against second and third units, but, you know, playing against first and second unit quality guys. I think it'll be still a challenge for him to get on the court. But as a guy who's on a partially guaranteed contract, he's proven that he deserves a chance to stick around, and that there is room for him to grow and develop, which, you know, when you're paying a guy a minimum and, you know, just a few years ago, he was the number four pick in the draft, and you can have him on a very team-friendly contract for 2 years and give him a chance to develop with a coaching staff that is known for development. I think that's an opportunity that you try to make the most of if you're, you know, a franchise like the Bucks.
Yeah, so that was definitely one of the guys I wanted to ask you more about is Dragan Bender, and you touched on it right there. That's some of the stuff I wanted to know about. His contract not fully guaranteed, and I guess there might be a little confusion as to what that means. Does it mean he's going to spend the majority of the year in the G League? I mean, you just said it. They're good at developing guys in the Bucks, so you would think he should be here in Milwaukee while he's sort of being an understudy and getting to work with the Bucks coaches. But what does the contract situation mean? Is he definitely going to be with the Bucks in 2019? I mean, is that for sure at this point?
Yeah, well, it's not for sure. I mean, it's a partial guarantee, and there are kind of different checkpoints over the next few months that will lock in guarantee amounts. Once we hit, I think it's January 10th, if he remains on the roster, then his contract will be guaranteed for the rest of the season. He's essentially on the same contract as Christian Wood was last year. I know it's dicey mentioning his name around these parts.
All right,
so
he's doing well with the Pistons, right? I saw a highlight play. I have no idea if that means he's going to make the. Or wait, no. The Pistons are missing Christian Wood. What's the story with Christian Wood right now?
I just know that he was with the Pistons, and there were highlights everywhere, and people were clamoring that he had to make that team, and maybe he will. That's the whole Christian Wood thing. But basically, Bender's on a similar contract to him, where his first year contract is partially guaranteed and would become fully guaranteed after January 10th, and then his second year contract is non-guaranteed. So the Bucks, yeah, really aren't on the hook for much if they wanted to move on from him now or really at any point in the next few weeks or months. But he has demonstrated that there is potential there. I don't think he'll spend all that much time in the G League just because of how much NBA service he has. I think there are kind of some general guidelines. I'd have to look them up as to how much time he can spend in the G League or if he can refuse to go down. I mean, I guess if he's going to be inactive, they'd probably encourage him to spend a few games in the G League and kind of work down there. So there could be some balance. I don't think it would be most of the year, though. I don't think it would be. I think that's the way you phrased it. I don't think it would be most of the year. I think he'll be around, especially if the Bucks have some injuries. You know, which injuries come and go. I mean, you're going to have those. We see a team that has two injuries right now, and so, you know, that would be a situation where they'd probably keep Dragan up because he could be part of the active roster. And, you know, I think that he's going to have some opportunities at the NBA level. He might get a few opportunities at the G League level. And a lot of it has to do with practicing with the team. I mean, when you're around them and you're kind of a, you know, a live body who can, you know, be going up against, you know, the likes of Giannis and the Lopez twins, you know, you're going to have to get better. And you're going to have to, you know, be prepared. You're being tested by, you know, some really high quality players, and you adjust. And, you know, the Bucks also, their coaching staff is known for their individual attention to detail and their vitamins approach and the way that they're getting their guys their daily work and improving on skills over time. So I think that puts him in a good position, you know, especially relative to where he was in Phoenix, where he had three different coaches. Each year, he had a different coach each of his first 3 years. So he had three different coaches just since he got drafted. And, you know, it's really hard to get into a flow and be consistent and know what's expected of you when you have that much coaching turnover. You're also dealing with a team that was struggling and had all kinds of issues going on. You know, and as a high draft pick, you know, he had a lot of expectations. And in Milwaukee, he comes in with virtually no expectations. Anything he adds is a bonus to this team, and he can kind of just focus on developing his skills and preparing himself to, you know, to jump in for whatever opportunities he gets. But he has a coaching staff that's going to be here, and is going to be able to work with him. And you know, he's not going to get new messages later this year or even next year. He's going to get the same messages, the same guidance, and you know, I think that's really, you know, what young players need to develop. And he's still only 21. He's been in the league for 3 years. He's still only 21. So there's a lot of room to grow, and there's a lot of potential for him, you know, if he can continue to progress.
It's incredible. I'm thinking about last week's podcast, and I'm asking you about all these newcomers. Did not even think to ask about Dragan Bender, former number 4 pick in the draft, 21 years old. I mean, what a great situation for the Bucks to be in, that he's the guy at the end of the bench that they can sort of you know, sort of bring along slowly, and the potential there is through the roof. Like you said, this could be a huge sort of lottery ticket that they've added to the fray.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it in terms of last year's roster, and would you rather have Jason Smith? No offense to Jason Smith, nice guy, great interview.
Very tall.
But would you rather have Jason Smith kind of in that third center position? Somebody who, you know, at this point, I think he's doing like broadcasting for the Wizards. But like, you know, he was a journeyman. He kind of was making a guaranteed salary of like, you know, $6 million plus, and just kind of was hanging around in the league because his contract was guaranteed. So, you know, he asked, did he come in for a few games and do a few things? Sure. But you knew who he was, you know, and instead now you have Dragan Bender, who at most, if he stays on this roster the whole season, is making about $1.6 million, is 21 years old, is a former number 4 draft pick, you know, highly rated prospect, who can then also be on the Bucks roster for next year, again at a minimum, and again non-guaranteed. So they have a lot of flexibility. It helps cap-wise. It helps, you know, in terms of having somebody who is a development player. They didn't make a pick this year in the draft. So you can basically consider Dragan Bender their draft pick for this year, because you could have gotten a 21-year-old in the draft that you thought had potential and could develop, and instead you're getting a 21-year-old in free agency who is making a minimum contract, already has 3 years in the league, and, you know, still has room to grow. So I think, you know, all in all, I don't know how much more you could ask for in terms of, you know, finding someone to fill out the roster if you're asking for the possibility for production and development.
As much as we talked about how deep this roster was last year, I think they're better this year, even without Malcolm Brogdon. This is just a top to bottom, just a juggernaut of a team, which kind of leads me to my next question. I'm not really feeling the excitement for this regular season, oddly enough, because even though I know the Bucks are definitely a contender for the whole thing, after going through last year, and this happens with all sports teams, it feels like they're at the bottom of the mountain that you know they're going to climb. They're going to win X number of games. They're going to make the playoffs. They'll probably be one of the top 2 seeds in the East, or maybe top 3 seeds. Very likely they could be the top seed. What would you advise a fan like me to get excited for? What are the things that really people should be looking for as the regular season unfolds? Because I can't imagine. First of all, I bet they don't win the same number of games because they're going to rest guys probably more liberally, I would think, knowing how comfortable their situation is. And secondly, it's like, what are you even looking for? You get to see some of these cool new arrangements and different teams and stuff, but they're going to the playoffs, and that's where things really start to matter. So what, you know, similar to the question last week, what questions do you still have? Why should a fan be looking forward to the regular season when you know that the Bucks should theoretically have a safe spot in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a fair question. I think that part of it is kind of being along for the ride and seeing how things progress. I mean, obviously, this isn't a boring team by any stretch of the imagination when you're watching them on a nightly basis. I mean, Giannis could do anything at any time. I mean, you're watching, you know, a transcendent player kind of getting into his prime. I don't know if Giannis is in his prime yet. Maybe he is. Maybe he has an extended prime, but I think that he still has room to grow. I think that's point number one, right? It's you can see Giannis do anything. I think that they play kind of a fun, fast-paced style of basketball. Yes, they're going to win a lot of games, and I can understand there being kind of a hangover from last year because you saw what they were. They still have a lot of the same guys. They're going to win a lot of games. They're going to be a top team in the East. You know, the playoffs is really when things, you know, get going. But kind of just seeing how they develop and seeing just the entertaining style of basketball that they play. Also, I think that there's an overall parity in the league where I don't think there's going to be as many nights where you're like, wow, like I can't get up for this game because the Bucks are great and the team they're playing is absolute garbage. Like there's not as many of those. I think you look all the way through the Western Conference. Anytime the Bucks are playing a Western Conference team, I think that's a great game. You know, even Phoenix, which is not expected to be good, you know, and it hasn't been good the past few years. Like they have some young guys. Oh, and they beat the Bucks twice last year. So there's something there. The Memphis Grizzlies, also not supposed to be good, but they've embraced the youth movement and they have, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. They have Ja Morant. They have some young guys that are interesting. You know, the Eastern Conference, I can only think of like, you know, like three teams that are like, you know what, like it's okay. Don't worry about them. Like, you know, Cleveland, the Knicks, and then the Hornets. Like those teams just. Oh, and the Wizards. I can't forget the Wizards. We just saw them the other day. So maybe four teams. The East is not as good, but when you're looking at teams that are like competitive, potential Eastern Conference playoff teams, you know, they're all going to be gunning for the Bucks, and it's something that the Bucks know. Like they know that, you know, they've had a kind of a target on their back since probably midway through last year, maybe 30 games in, where teams are like, okay, this team is in first. We want to get them whenever we play them. So you're going to get their best game. Which can lead to some, you know, really fun atmospheres, really fun games. So, you know, I think that would be the argument for being excited for this season. But like I said, I do understand kind of the hangover effect. I do understand that the playoffs are the expectation, and going deep into the playoffs is the expectation. You know, but there's something to be said about kind of being along for the ride and seeing how everything gets there.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Of course, there's also Robin and Brook Lopez brotherly intrigue to keep an eye on. Loved the comment that Brook Lopez said, Robin is a poor mimicry of me in general. That's my favorite quote from the last week. So I know there are things to watch. NBA is a little different than the other sports we have in Wisconsin. Baseball and football, you can think you have the best team, but it doesn't feel like a guarantee as much as it is in the NBA. You know, college sports, you still got the regular season, the conference chases, things like that. But man, in the NBA, it feels like their destiny is cemented to a degree. But like you said, there's always there are plenty of fun things that'll develop as the year goes along. Real quickly, checking in on DJ Wilson. We talked about Eric Bledsoe's injury, and DJ Wilson, as much as he became a full hero last year, I know he isn't top of mind the way that other members of the Bucks are. But it does seem like injuries have followed this guy around and really prevented him from sort of taking that permanent next step. Where do you think he stands? Is he going to be unavailable for the start of the regular season?
It's unclear still what DJ's situation is going to be. He's been able to do some shooting and kind of get up and down, do some workouts and rehab and all that stuff from the hamstring. I talked to him in Dallas on Friday, you know, just as he was coming off the court from shoot around, and he said, oh yeah, you know, I'm getting better. I have to just check a few more boxes and then I'll be good. And so, you know, he's progressing in that way. The team doesn't think it's as severe as the right hamstring strain that he had last year around this time that kept him out for the beginning of the regular season. But, you know, we'll have to see exactly, you know, how severe it is. Probably tomorrow we can check in, or Wednesday we can check in to find out more. The interesting thing is that he is someone who is eligible to have their option picked up before the start of the season, along with Dante DiVincenzo. Dante's third-year option is available to the Bucks, and DJ's fourth-year option is available to the Bucks. And so, considering the way that they have progressed, there's no chance that the Bucks decline Dante's option. That they're definitely picking that up, and then DJ's. I would fully expect that they pick that up. It's somebody who has proven himself at the NBA level, and has been a valuable player for them. He's definitely taken major strides since his rookie year, and is someone who, has demonstrated that they can play him in bigger games at bigger moments, and he can come through. I remember a game against the Pistons where he really broke out last year, and he was the one defending Blake Griffin, knocking down shots. He also, played crunch time in a game against the Raptors last year in Toronto during the regular season, and he was a part of why they won that game. So, with the way that he can stretch the floor on offense, penetrate, drive with the ball in his hands, the way he can bounce around on defense, scrambling out from player to player, and uses athleticism to defend multiple positions. I think he fits all the things that the Bucks are trying to do, so I would be surprised if they didn't pick up his option. But, the time is coming for those decisions to be made, and so, we'll have to see what the Bucks decide to do.
Bucks will close down the preseason with a game Thursday at Pfizer Forum. Minnesota Timberwolves will be in town for a 7 o'clock tip. Then 1 week later, like we said, the start of the regular season, where the Bucks will be in Houston to face the Rockets October 24th, 7 p.m. start time. And then they'll be back home on the 26th the following Saturday, hosting the Miami Heat to kick off the home part of the schedule. Speaking of the Rockets, before we get out of here, General Manager Daryl Morey sent a tweet heard round the league in support of Hong Kong, which is having a dispute with China. A whole lot of politics that you could break down there, but the long and short of it is that China now has a somewhat fractured relationship with the NBA. The social justice and commerce have been butting heads here over the past couple weeks. The NBA has struggled to sort of handle this PR-wise, but thoughts that the relationship could have soured enough that it might actually affect their business dealings to the point that the salary cap is impacted in the years ahead. I don't understand a lot of the economics behind exactly how that would work, but it sounds as if, if NBA and China, they're not doing the same level of business they were before, there won't be enough money in the league to go around, and they're not going to be able to pay players quite as much. For the average fan, for the Bucks fan, how could this potentially impact their roster or their situation? Like, what can you boil it down to a couple layman's takeaways for what this could mean?
Yeah, so basically, I think the China TV deal that the NBA has struck brings in about $200 million a year to the league. It's something like that in terms of games that are shown in China on Tencent and things like that. And about half that money goes toward player salaries, split among teams, all that stuff. So you could see a significant drop in the salary cap, somewhere, from 10 to 10% or maybe more. I haven't run all the numbers, but if the salary cap is not going up, then the projections as to where teams would be relative to the cap absolutely changes. So guys who are already under contract, those contracts are signed. They're done. And so you're going to be crunched a lot more. Something like, Giannis Antetokounmpo's Supermax extension, that would actually go down because that's based on the percent of the cap. So with the cap projected to go up, that is what puts us at the number of $253 million, almost $254 million for his Supermax extension. But if the cap is not at the number that it's expected to be, then whatever number it is at, then Giannis's Supermax extension would be the percent amount equal to that figure, as opposed to the figure that it's currently expected to be. So I think for most of the league, it would be an absolute debacle. They'd probably have to figure out some kind of workaround or way to deal with it, because teams have been planning on a specific number. They've already announced the projected salary cap figures for next year and kind of a tentative one for the year afterwards, so that teams have an idea of where things would stand and what numbers they need to be working under. And if that number goes down and teams already have a bunch of money on the books, then you're going to see a lot of teams in the luxury tax, which obviously, would be a problem for a lot of teams in the league, or got teams that are trying to shed salaries, and then you're cutting and stretching players, and that doesn't look good. So you might have to have some type of amnesty deal like they had in the past, or just some kind of workaround to solve that problem so that everybody's not in the tax. All of this would be contingent on China and Tencent and all of the different streaming platforms pulling out of their deal. And I have no idea in terms of the legal ability to do that, or how any of that would work. I don't know if all this would blow over over time. I'm sure the NBA is doing a lot of damage control to try and fix that. You can hear that in their statements. You can kind of hear that in the way players are talking about it in some cases, trying to protect their own brands. I know that James Harden caught some flack for saying, "Oh, like we love China." It's like, well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but for all cases, but for people who have business interests in China, players who have signature shoes or who do work with shoe companies, or even have contracts not just with American shoe companies, but actually with Chinese shoe companies. Like Klay Thompson has a shoe in China. Dwayne Wade has a contract with a company in China for a shoe in China. So there's obviously, it's very convoluted and complex. But there would be a potential scenario where the salary cap would be affected if that TV deal in China fell through in some way and the money coming over was somehow either gone or was less.
Yeah, a very messy situation. And like I said, when commerce and social justice are colliding like this, it can be pretty bad. And the NBA has gone from the NBA's got a little bit of egg on its face for the whole scenario, and I'm interested to see how it plays out. It would not surprise me if, like you said, it blows over. I mean, these things usually do, but hard to know what's going on in the international business community. Matt Velasquez, again, he is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He'll be covering the Bucks all season long. He'll be back here Thursday for that last preseason game. Back again on October 26th, as we said, when the Bucks open their home slate against the Miami Heat. Matt, any last thoughts before I send you off into the wilderness?
No, I think we about covered it. Though I'm sure people might be worried about Giannis and his illness from the other day, and I can tell you, you don't really need to be worried about it. He'll be fine.
All right, excellent. Find him on Twitter at @Matt_Velasquez, VelazQuez. You can find me on Twitter as well at JRRadcliffe. That's spelled like it sounds with an E on the end of it. And you can also find this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We'll be coming at you every week talking about the Milwaukee Bucks as they make their push toward the 2020 NBA championship. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will catch you again very soon. Bye-bye.